Hey, folks, welcome back to the Play to Win podcast. This is Alex, and I've got the other game gurus here, Jared and Josh with us. And we've got a very special guest with us, Matt. Matt, how are you doing today?
Fantastic, Alex. Thanks for having me today.
It's great to have you on here. It's pretty cool to have Matt on here because he's going to talk something that we don't usually talk on this show, which is PC gaming. We tend to be pretty hardcore in the console space, but not so much in the PC gaming space. I know the last game I think I played on PC was probably Duke Nukem. So it's been a little while. But it's probably the more cutting edge area of gaming, and definitely a lot of our listeners out there are probably into that as well. So Matt, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, just a brief overview of what your gaming CV, so to speak, gaming resume.
Absolutely. So a lot of things I'm kind of known for these days is kind of being a evangelist for Star Citizen. So I'm known in
that's
the game.
That's good. We're going to talk about that.
I'm known as Supreme Alderman in game, leader of the Immortal Mercenaries organization. I'm part of the Star Citizen Guide Program for new players. I've been a backer since 2012 or 2014 and a follower since 2012. It's been an inordinate amount of time in a game that is not complete yet. And when not in the game, my day job consists of explaining information technology concepts to non-tech people. So I think I'm a perfect resource for this one.
That works out well. Because
how many in-game hours have you spent?
Oh, good question.
Thankfully, it is not like Steam and does not keep track of those things. But I mean, we are probably towards 1,000+ hours range.
Oh, that's it? Come on.
Yeah, I was expecting like 10,000 hours or something crazy.
You've been backing since 2014. You can do better than
for
that.
For a game currently filled with bugs and limited play for the past couple of years, it's really not too bad.
Yeah. Jared's pushing that on Cyberpunk.
I've exceeded that on Cyberpunk. I'm 1,000 plus easily.
Jeez, man. I can't play one game that long. I think the longest I've ever spent in a game was probably either Elder Scrolls Oblivion or back in the – you know what? I lied. I did play EverQuest a whole lot when I was younger, and I probably put 1,000 hours or so
in the game. It depends on the game. I mean, it's easier to put hours like that into a online multiplayer function, right?
So for sure.
I put similar hours into when Sword and Shield came out, playing like a lot online against other people.
Yeah. So, well, that's the beauty of games like that or roguelikes. Those kind of games just have a lot more replay, kind of just explore or just kind of continually doing the same things the same things differently. And that it's a lot easier to sink a lot of hours into that. Well, before we jump in and talk Star Citizen, let's jump into some of the news this week. We'll kind of go quick. We don't have anything too heavy we're going to talk about. Well, we got one topic that we're probably going to spend a few minutes on. But first thing I want to point out is we got a couple of releases coming out on November 17th. So we're recording this on the 12th. You'll probably hear it on the 14th, maybe. And so we've got Mario RPG coming out, the remake of Super Mario RPG. I am super stoked for this because I played the original back on the Super Nintendo. I think, Josh, you played that as well, didn't you? You're looking forward to this game?
Yeah, I mean, I never played it on Super Nintendo.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
I emulated it, though.
yes, we never did that.
In college.
Right. And then Persona 5 Tactica. Is coming out on November 17th. That's coming to Game Pass as well. So if you got that, you'll have access to that. Just a tactics game in the Persona 5 universe. It's a totally unique story using the Persona 5 characters. So if you're into the Persona 5 game, which something I was super stoked about, This game is coming soon. We've got the PS5 Slims are out in the wild now. And so if you're looking for one of those, that's going to become the new norm for PlayStation 5. So has anybody seen one physically?
I think, don't they? They've got, like, instead of, like, the solid plate, there's kind of, like, a split, like, toward the middle, like, horizontally, yeah, right?
It's modular now.
Yeah.
So. I think the idea is to be able to take out or put in a disk drive. Yeah, an optical drive. So be on the lookout for those. You know, it's probably the size it should have been from the start.
Yeah.
It's still quite large. Then we've also got a pretty big news release. This actually came as part of kind of a leak, but GTA 6, we got news that we're going to get news on GTA 6 in December.
It's anybody, a big deal.
Yeah, it is a huge deal. Go ahead, Jared.
I was going to say GTA 5, whether your feelings on the game or the content of the games, regardless of those, that studio put so much freaking detail, and their AIs are, like, their NPC AIs are the best, regardless if you're talking GTA, Red Dead Redemption 2. Rockstar pumps games out, and the fact that they've spent this long on it, and the fact that they are taking their time with releasing it and all that stuff gives me a lot of confidence in it. And I know that there was some developmental turmoil with this one, which is part of the reason why it took them a little longer to get it out, but I'm confident that they're going to push out a really just solid game, and I cannot wait to see it. I can't wait to see how they topped what they did for GTA 5, because as old as that game is, it's ridiculous how well put together it is.
Yeah, I would put them in the same category as CJ Projekt Red, in the sense that they help push the overall industry. That's what I'm looking for, right? Because we don't need something that's more about focus on the microtransactions. We need to focus on what actually elevates gaming to the next level.
Right. Well, and they, Rockstar kind of made the model, the dragon that everybody's been chasing of, let's put this content online, make it MMO, and print money. And that's what Rockstar has done. And I guess Destiny's been really good at it, but I can't think of, I mean, Fortnite, but it's still different though. Like, it's incredible what they've done with GTA Online. Incredible. And it sucks because I've wanted a single player GTA more than chopping into whatever the city is, Los Santos Online. But at the same time, like Matt said, they push the industry with GTA Online.
And it's killing it. GTA Online is killing it. They'll probably keep GTA Online the way it is to keep that player base up, and then just maybe update it with whatever kind of graphical
the model from 5, it's probably not going to be that tough to do it for 6, you would think.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
I'm not a developer, but...
It depends, because the rumors are GTA 6 may be back in Vice City in the 80s.
That's cool.
And if they do that, they may lose out on some of the kind of more modern, wild things that they can do in the online. That's kind of been some of the discourse I've been hearing, at least. Hmm. But either way, I personally haven't played. I don't think I played 5 at all. I think the last GTA was 4. Is 5 on Game Pass?
Yep. Hmm.
I didn't realize that.
I highly recommend playing it. The storytelling in 5 is really good, and it still plays really well. And you're playing the best version of it.
Okay. Well, good to know.
Yeah.
You reminded me of another news story that I'll just briefly touch on. I know no one here is hugely into Fortnite.
Mm-hmm.
But Fortnite is definitely a money-printing machine and a huge, huge driver in the industry. And, I mean, they didn't invent it, but they basically perfected oh my God, I'm blanking on the name of the style of game that is.
Oh, King of the Hill?
No,
Royale.
It's
Battle Royale. Thank you. I'm glad.
I haven't heard that phrase in a minute.
That's why I'm glad I'm not doing this show alone. Yeah, they basically perfected the Battle Royale. Well, they just went back to vanilla Fortnite recently, and had player base out the roof from that. So clearly people were excited to see it go return to its roots. Anybody other? I played briefly. Has anybody else here played Fortnite?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I mean,
a little bit.
Not in within the past 2 or 3 years, to be quite Same. Honest with you, but.
I haven't yeah. played since it was vanilla Fortnite. And I, you know, playing with my little brother who was at the time is the perfect age group that it was shooting for. I know, Josh, you played a little bit of PUBG back when that was a thing.
Yeah,
too,
PUBG, Warzone, PUBG. I mean, PUBG had a lot of potential, but it took them too long to work out a lot of bugs. So yeah. they got passed up in the hierarchy.
Yeah, that just fizzled out.
Yeah.
I think Fortnite has the advantage. Fortnite has the advantage that they just make these great marketing partnerships and bring in all these different things with it. So,
well, it's funny about Fortnite was their battle royale stuff and their multiplayer was, or that game mode is not Fortnite. Like the actual game night was like zombie hordes or something when I first saw a trailer for it, and you're building bases to hold them back. Like that's, and then they just this little portion of it, everybody locked in on. And yeah, that game's crazy.
We got another release date recently for Enshrouded. That's coming out January 24, 2024. Matt, you want to give us just a brief description of Enshrouded? This is a PC release that looks pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, imagine, so if anybody's kind of heard of the Valheim games, so imagine kind of a little bit of base building with actual PvE content as well. So it's your, you can play up to 4 friends in the same game server on there. You can locally host that on one PC. Everyone's playing together, build base together, fight bosses together, kind of rebuild and kind of figure out what happened to the world and what happened to the Mist and watch how, but the Steam new early access trailer, really funny, great watch. I would suggest anybody who hasn't watched it go watch that one, because they've got a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor in it. So great developer, played the earlier demo, looks like it's really well polished by comparison with a lot of early access games that we've been seeing recently.
Nice. Well, we can keep an eye on that one. It allegedly is going to be coming to consoles in the future, but there is no release date on that yet. So we've got All-Star Brawl, the sequel. Sounds like it's killing it. It's getting rave reviews from folks thus far. Is it actually out, Jared, or is it just
early access? Yeah, it came out last week, I think.
Okay, so that one, that's something definitely to be checking out. That, I mean, it looked a lot of fun, the original that was out last year.
I played the original. The original was a blast. There's some navigation issues within the UI that were kind of weird to me, but once you actually got in the game, it played a lot like Smash Brothers with just different characters.
That's obviously the idea Smash behind Brothers it, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's if you don't have a Nintendo but you want to play this party-style battle game, then it's a good alternative, and it has fun characters.
Well, I love the Super Saiyan Shaggy that they were showing.
Yeah.
That was my favorite meme out of that.
Yeah, but it's a fun game. Y'all should check it out if you haven't. You had some buddies you can hop in there with.
All right, the last thing I wanted to mention is Modern Warfare 3, the remake or the reimagine or whatever it is. I feel like we need to come up with better naming conventions.
This is just the Modern Warfare reboot, is what I call it.
Yeah,
they need to come up with be a little more creative with names. Well, either way, this game has come out and is not coming out to very good reviews thus far. I believe some of the early some of the reviews on the campaign have been in the 3, 4, 5 range, which is not what you want to see. It's very hours short also. And unsatisfying.
Yeah.
And say what?
Were you talking about like ratings, like 3, 4, 5, or the hours that the campaign actually
is? It's short too, so you're right. 3, 4, 5 hours to complete it as well, depending on how much you're sitting on the pause screen, I guess. And then there's a lot of issues with the way the maps are set off. They've already pulled a couple of maps because people are spawning in like really
unadvantageous areas. Like they're spawning and getting instantly destroyed
right in the middle of an enemy camp, right?
They had to pull out like 3 maps or something, which is really unacceptable. for a game of this level and from a studio of their size. So
they really set themselves up for failure on this one. Because if you remember the discourse, you know, about a year ago, they're saying we're skipping this year. We're not making a Call of Duty this year. And then, you know, about 7-8 months ago, they're like, we're actually going to release some DLC for Modern Warfare 2. So we're working on that. And then about 6 months ago, they're like, you know what? We're actually really excited about this. We're going to make it a little bit bigger. We're going to release a full Call of Duty, and it's going to be essentially Modern Warfare 3, even though I don't think they announced that part yet. So they went from a DLC, skipping the entire year, to a DLC to a full game that is essentially might as well just be DLC, right? So they
and this
really
game has
just
zombies in it. I'm sure
themselves.
They spent a lot of time on zombies, more so than the campaign. Obviously there's multiplayer, and in all fairness, like I don't like ragging on games too much, but they say the gunplay in this one's probably the best Call of Duty's ever been, so to give it a positive. But from the first game to this game, it's sad hearing how much they've kind of declined, because that first one in the series was awesome.
It
played well. I was watching a GameRanks video the other day of best nighttime graphics, and this was on there, and I 100% agree. Like, the night in there looked really cool. Mm-hmm. The set pieces were really nice. And so
did you guys download Modern Warfare 2?
No.
Well, so I wasn't aware that this was happening, and I had Modern Warfare 2 from last year, and I guess when it upgrades to 3 automatically?
No, so in order to continue playing 2, I just heard about this recently.
Yeah.
You have to download 3. You still don't get access to 3 unless
it. Okay. That's weird.
It is really weird, and I think it has to do with the fact that they originally designed this game to be DLC.
Yeah,
it's also like 200 gigs.
Yeah,
and they're slowly making it smaller, but each update is a whole re-download of the game. So you have to. It's a little bit smaller than last time, but it's still like 140 gig update or something like that. They need to figure some things out.
I started downloading it last night because I was just,
still going.
Well, yeah, I mean, it wasn't 140. It was 100 and like, so it had like two small,
135.
Like 3.5 gig.
Yeah.
And then 105 gig. So about 112 or so.
Okay.
But I was just like, what the hell? Like I thought I was going to play Modern Warfare 3, and then it said Modern Warfare 2, and it said Modern Warfare 3. And I was like, what?
It would get a lot more goodwill if it was just a tack on to Modern Warfare 2 like that. That and then people would be like, yeah, it was a 3-hour campaign. It wasn't great, but you know, I got it with Modern Warfare 2. Cool.
And at the end of the day, too, hopefully with Microsoft's management, this won't happen again. Granted, Microsoft misses 2. I mean, that vampire game we played.
That's a game I can forget.
But that's
I don't think that's their only miss of the year
I can think of. Like that bad. Like I wasn't a big fan of the new Halo. But I feel that they'll get the Activision stuff under wraps, and Call of Duty's too big of a title, a brand to just screw up like this.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me of one more thing, then we'll jump into our discussion of Star Citizen. And that is, Starfield has won Xbox Game of the Year at the Golden Joysticks. I know we briefly discussed this offline. It's like, what is it competing against? And if you think about it, though, they will fill out categories for systems with third-party games as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you look at PlayStation's list of third-party games in that were in the Game of the Year contention for PS5, it's things like Street Fighter, right? Mm-hmm. Street Fighter 6. So obviously not a PS5 exclusive or a first party game, but it is what other releases have they had this year until Spider-Man 2? There haven't been a lot of Sony exclusive games or first party games, I should say. So that's the same thing going on with the Xbox. The Xbox just had a couple more exclusives than Sony did this year, or a couple more first-party exclusives, I should say. So they've got that going as well. That's something I wanted to point out there. And then Final Fantasy 16 actually was winning a couple awards too there with some audio engineering and lead actor as well. All right, so without further ado, let's jump into the topic of the day. We're going to talk some Star Citizen. So Star Citizen, I will just do a brief overview of it, and then I'm going to let Matt kind of lead the discussion. We're going to jump in with some questions, though. Star Citizen started development in 2010 and really entered into full development in 2012. It is the highest crowdsourced anything, I think, ever. And while there are aspects of it released currently and playable, it is still in its alpha. It is a PC Microsoft Windows exclusive. And the big name to know from this is the lead designer, Chris Roberts. So without further ado, Matt, tell us a little bit about Star Citizen. What is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a good piece is that if we're looking at that overall timeline, we can't just discuss Star Citizen without discussing its single player aspect, which is going to be Squadron 42. But kind of diving into your first question, really, what's Star Citizen? It's, for better or worse, a sci-fi universe simulator / sandbox. So it's built on a scale that you haven't ever seen before for video games, with like a lot of common gameplay elements with FPS combat, space combat, economy simulation, cargo running, delivery missions, salvage, mining, exploration. So if you ever played anything like Elite Dangerous, similar aspects to that. But the biggest thing that separates out Star Citizen is the actual underlying game engine.
Okay. So it's sounding like pretty much, I've read some things about it. I've watched it. I remember it in early development. It's like your go-to outer space sci-fi experience, right? Like they're trying to do everything in this game.
Imagine what Facebook tried to do with the metaverse, but good and sci-fi. So there's a lot of it, and the game right now is very heavy on the FPS side of things because the development has been focused for the past couple of years on their single player game, which is Squadron 42. And I think this would be probably a good transition point to kind of discuss that. And
What exactly is Squadron 42? I've seen that referenced a lot. It's one of the modules, correct?
Kind of. It is actually a standalone, separate game in and of itself, built on the same engine, which is Star Engine. So what Squadron 42 is, it is effectively the broad strokes for the overall campaign is you are going back with Squadron 42, which is a fighter wing that also does like first person combat type missions, that type of thing. So imagine more like Call of Duty campaign style, but in space, fighting against an alien race known as the Vanduul. So you're kind of going through this overall concept of the campaign, understanding that something creepy is happening. Okay, we are about to get invaded. We know that this is how the bad guys always kind of stage and get you ready. And then so there's a lot of anticipation building in the game. They recently released a kind of early access video teaser trailer called Hold the Line for Star Citizen. And what that actually showed you was that Squadron 42 is what's considered to be feature complete at this point. They are just currently going through the polish passes. So I would anticipate seeing that within the next 12 to 18-ish months time frame.
Do you expect it to hit that time frame? Because that's one thing.
Star Citizen and dates. They haven't actually released a date, but there's definitely an internal goal time frame that looks like it's about 12 months.
I mean, honestly, game development is understandable. It's very fluid dates. And just they often we don't hear about it as much, but they often internally will push games back. And often even when they release dates, it's like are they actually going to hit this date? Because if they set it too soon, you know, it's so much fluid there. I mean, we saw it with Starfield. We saw it with Halo. You know, we've got a lot of modern references to it. We should have seen it with Cyberpunk, right? So there's lots of references to that we can point out to. So you hit on one thing that was really interesting to me. I was kind of curious about this. Is Star Citizen like Starfield, where you just have human exploration in space? Or is there this are there other races, other things going out in space other than a, you know, humans? And yes, it sounds like there are.
So there are other races. They're not in the game at this point, but they have a really kind of impressive lore team. It's built out multiple different alien languages, and there's some of them that you can actually already learn. So if you're super nerd that likes things like Klingon, they've got, or Navi, right, from Avatar and stuff like that, they actually have Elvish languages built out for the Bannu and the Jon, and
that's impressive.
And the Vanduul, they haven't really released much on the Vanduul side of things, but they're using a lot of the same resources to kind of build out those languages that those groups did as well in the past. So they didn't really, for a game that is made at this point over $620 million in backing for crowdfunding, they definitely have spared no expense at this point for these types of things.
Hey, we need depth.
But quick question. Yeah. What's the technical footprint of Squadron 42? Like, how much space does it bog down,
like in your versus the actual computer?
Yeah, versus the actual like Star Citizen side.
So Squadron 42 is not out yet, so we don't have any visibility to that. But if you're looking at Star Citizen as a whole, it's smaller than your Modern Warfare update. So we're talking sub 150 gigs.
Here's another question for you, though, is and I would get into this conversation with Adam all the time, like, why wouldn't he consider throwing this on the newer generation of consoles?
So funny thing about that is that there's been some leaked information that they are in discussions, whether or not that is going to be actual Star Citizen, or is
I'll take Squadron 42,
or is it just
going to
be
game.
Squadron 42 Seriously. At this point? But
yeah,
I think, and you touched base a little bit on the Starfield side of things as well, Alex, a second ago. Mm-hmm. And so that's big in the news right now. And then you've had Star Citizen with their Citizen Con, which is their kind of annual convention as well associated with the game.
It's crazy to me that a game that's not out yet has its own convention.
Yeah.
It's wild. I mean, I'm not saying anything negative about it. It's just interesting.
It's been so present. It's
a game as a service at this point. It's been effectively a game for the past 2 years. But really, that biggest difference is, like, between Star Citizen and Starfield, one is going to be that it's an MMO, right? So you've got
all of
your friends that could be in the game with you. You've got multi-crew ships. For anybody who's played Starfield, the biggest thing you're going to notice is outside of the initial loading screen, when you're loading into the game, you don't see loading screens. There are no loading screens. Huh. Reason for this is because of they're using a technology called 64-bit floating point, which is basically older games, which was original built on like the CryEngine. So CryEngine 3, that's off of your 32-bit. So if anybody remembers back in the day, it's not an exact equation, but back on your old 32-bit Windows PCs, you could have like 4 gigs of RAM, right? Okay. Now you could the theoretical limit of a x64 architecture is 16 exabytes of RAM, which is 16 million terabytes. So the equivalent is, okay, we're talking a couple were max of like 64 by 64 kilometer maps in CryEngine 3. If you're talking on this is maps on the scale of star systems and galaxies.
So we're talking this thing has a shitload of processing power available to it.
Yeah. Which kind of, I was going to say, kind of leads me to ask a question. But I'll let you finish what your thought was, Matt.
Yeah. So the big piece to that is then also how it's actually going to make it so your computer's not trying to process all that information. Uh-huh. And that's where the big part of that architecture comes in. And so that comes into what we consider to be called server meshing, which is the ability to dynamically mesh different game servers together. So when you have, when you're talking about capital ships that can have 80 plus people on them, and you have multiple capital ships,
game world by itself,
all yeah. in a battle with each other, each of those ships effectively will be its own server, and those servers will be sharing all of their information to a centralized resource and communicating them back out. So it's basically functions as a middleware between your client side on your gaming PC and the gaming server itself, and it's communicating. So the ability to fire projectiles across game servers and hit targets on the other game server. That,
so
that's
it,
where
it's safe
really
to say this game is really it's always been about pushing the technology forward.
Absolutely.
And I mean, because they were one of the first ones starting to use AI in generation of their video game, right? Because they were talking about it back in 2012 and 2014.
Procedurally generated planets.
Right.
And the difference between it is the actual planet entire thing is procedurally generated. And it's always there. That's the persistence of the game. So we've had situations where we're doing events and we know where the location is going to be for the event. We will drop off a bunch of weapons and a backpack at the location so that we can drop in basically ungeared, gear up at the location, have additional ammo and stuff like that. And when you leave that location, those backpacks, everything like that still exists on the planet. So, and this is... exists for everyone on that planet as well. So if somebody stumbles across it, they can take all of your stuff.
So that's impressive, because that's a thing that games have struggled with for generations, right?
Absolutely.
You know, you start in older games, you start building up bodies, for example, you start killing a bunch of enemies, the game starts bogging down. That's why they have the trope of characters or bodies just kind of disappearing after some time in games.
I mean,
and that's a struggle. So this is pretty creative.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that there's not some level of like object calling, right? There's going to be some level that's going to be required, right? You don't, if a ship explodes, you don't want to have to be kind of streaming in every single screw, nut and bolt that fell onto the ground, right? But if you have the general carcass of the ship, then that creates gameplay for people later to come salvage that ship, turn those resources back in as station. Those resources are then used to repair somebody else's ship so they can also do the combat. So
it seems very obviously, as we've been talking, technically complex. From all that you can do, how the game is set up with servers, from, you know, staying with the concept of complexity, from like a gameplay standpoint, how would you rate this game experience from a overall complication to enter / intimidation factor for like a new player? Like how is it? Is it overwhelming? Is it from just like a volume of kind of game lore and actions that you can perform, like menu screens, things like that?
And I want to piggyback on Josh's question and tack on, what's the initial buy-in to this game outside of buying a gaming PC that can run it? If I have the rig, what do I need monetarily to get into Star Citizen? So
absolutely. Easiest point on that one is $45 for starter gaming packages. But more importantly, on playing Star Citizen at this point, is really understanding where it's at in its development process. We are talking about a game that is pre-alpha and is effectively a tech demo. So they've recently released a video that's kind of highlighting Star Engine. Star Engine is crazy technology, but it's still effectively a technical demo. We have limited missions at this point in game. They've got the tools and resources on the back end built out for that. They also have things coming online in the next year or two about with base building for your organizations. But right now, we are in the process where they have the persistence, but they do not have all the server meshing happening yet. So there's still, it's still a technical lead on that side of things. Recommendation I can tell you is, starting on the 17th through the 30th, they've got a free fly going on. What that does is allows you to kind of step into the game, see where it's at in the development process, see what's your understanding and if you're comfortable with it right now. And what that's going to do is that's going to let you see that okay, I can play this game in this state. I will tell you, vast majority of the people that are playing Star Citizen right now are people who work in IT because they are used to bugs. It is. There are times where it's very buggy. You have times where the AI just stands there looking at you like you're crazy. You have other times where they will actually group together and hunt you down when you're doing a mission. So you never really know what you're going to get into until you kind of see where that server FPS is going on. But yeah, $45 is not a bad considering how much AAA games are getting at this point. You can buy giant ships, but all you need is 45, and vast majority of the ships are already in game to be able to purchase with in-game
so
credits.
So for $45, I get access to this game.
Yep. The Star Citizen.
Do I get Star Citizen, right? Do I get when it actually releases, when it, you know, in 2028, when it's fully released and realized, do I still get access to this game, or do I have to rebuy in? Okay. Nope. So this is an investment.
It's one package, and but the key differentiator is now Squadron 42 is no longer part of it. They're going to be separating that out into its own. So anybody who's backed in the past would have both things in their game package. Newer people will have to buy that one separately. So,
and it's what, $20 more, I think, right, to get the full package with both
actually
games.
They took it off the store. I think it's probably associated with EU regulations and that if you don't have a release date on a game, you're not supposed to be selling it.
Gotcha.
So kind of tacking on Alex's question there, Matt, I'm assuming you've spent more than $45 in Star Citizen. how are you rewarded once the game actually releases for being what you are to this game and in this game? Like, so, are you going to get any sort of like accolades? Are they going to give you?
Are you going to have an NPC in the game?
Are they going to give you an attaboy and a thank
at
you?
At the end of the day, I don't care about that. What I care about and what I've seen probably since 2014, 2015, was I kind of saw the writing on the wall and that they were developing a gaming engine itself. And that's what I've been kind of backing and I wanted to see, is because imagine this Star Engine, the ability to create these galaxy or scale maps, and imagine that for other games. Everybody played StarCraft back in the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine StarCraft as an MMO with those battles happening on different planets. Imagine Warhammer 40K on that scale where different planets. The ability to generate these maps on this scale and having the tools in the background on that. Everybody's talking about Unreal Engine and how it does all these great things about character modeling, stuff like that. Imagine this thing also has a lot of the character development, but also has tools on the back end to streamline and simplify building out all these things. They have a new system that's coming online called Maelstrom that allows your kind of destruction of locations. You've got fire propagation. You've got all sorts of crazy technology that's coming into this stuff.
Do they plan on releasing this to other studios to use once it's fully realized, or are they going to keep it proprietary?
They haven't, but so the video that they released was Star Engine, and then at the end of it, it says Star Engine TM. When you're putting it together and you show all the different things that the engine can do, and then you hit it with that tag at the end, Star Engine TM, I have a hard time believing they're not using that as a sales point to smaller game studios to say that, hey, come talk to us about using Star Engine for developing your MMO.
Cool. I like it.
Well, and I think that's a really good point that we're all kind of touching on right now, is just how impressive the engine that they have built is coming together. Usually with MMOs, you don't see the level of detail. I mean, you do not see the level of detail that you're getting in Star Citizen and this Star Engine. You know, you think about some of the most impressive MMOs of our time, things like Final Fantasy 14, things like WoW, things like EverQuest. These are really impressive games that do a lot of things to keep the world engaging, but they don't have the level of detail and persistency and creativity that Star Engine is giving to Star Citizen. Which brings me to another question, is obviously this game wasn't originally built on the Star Engine.
Correct.
So tell me a little bit about how that process. I mean, don't go too deep in the weeds here, because I don't have that background. But tell me a little bit about how have they been able to keep this thing relevant over 10-11 year development cycle.
Yeah, the TLDR explanation is that is they originally were building on CryEngine back in the day, and then blah blah blah, a lot of lawsuits later, they shifted over to Lumberyard, and Lumberyard is effectively a fork of CryEngine. Lumberyard's owned by Amazon, and then from Lumberyard it evolved into effectively StarEngine, and StarEngine has all of their best in kind of breed. They've got Vulkan integration, which is for graphics. That allows you more stuff to run on your GPU rather than your CPU. And then their entire goal for this is to ensure that the platform stays relevant. And so if you watch that Hold the Line video, they showed the difference between what their graphics looked like a few years ago when they were using the engine versus what they look like now. They've done repasses in Squadron 42 over all their hero characters, which are voiced by people like Gillian Anderson, Gary Oldman, Mark Strong, a large number of these people who have been in Chris Roberts' products in the past, like the Wing Commander games. So a lot of these actors, and the high level of fidelity. If you watch any of their stuff from their CitizenCon demos, they show crazy levels of fabric and hair physics and stuff like that to make add to a level of fidelity and realism that people aren't used to in games.
So I'm aware of the time. There's a couple other topics I want to make sure we touch on here. We've briefly touched on how this game compares to other games, and you've kind of opened my eyes a little bit. For some reason, I always kind of associated this with essentially Second Life, but in space, sci-fi yeah. Second Life. But it's so much more than that, and there, well, obviously, and there's a lot of common elements, things that we're actually used to in is as part of this game. You know, you talk about a lot of FPS kind of things going on. Yes. So, you know, what kind of comparisons can you make for those out there who haven't had a lot of experience with Star Citizen?
Yeah, so the closest equivalent and what was considered to be was going to be the biggest competitor was Elite Dangerous back in the day. So as we all know, Elite Dangerous took away their support of consoles, was about a year or so ago at this point. But realistically, whatever kind of gameplay style you like, if you want to just be a chill guy who is a space trucker, runs packages from planets to planets, great. If you want to be a pirate hijacking people, great. If you want to do, if you're Call of Duty Chad who wants to do a lot of FPS missions, hook up with a group of people who can actually drop you in and then go that route. They also, I guess another piece part to it is there is also a kind of non-MMO aspect, which is Arena Commander. So that's like combat and kind of like a quick drop-in matches, and then whether it be first-person shooter or be actual spaceship combat, kind of provides you a little bit of dip your toes without having to gear up, go down to a planet, do the stuff. Because as somebody who's a dad, I don't always have time to whatever devote a couple hours to playing video game.
So how often, or how did you kind of, when you initially started playing this, what was your kind of method of choice or gameplay style, and maybe how have you evolved with all of these elements that you just told us to
where you're honestly, at now? Honestly, the game, you need to have people to play it with at this point. A lot of things that you're ending up doing is kind of self-created gameplay because not all of the mission systems are in-game yet. So finding people that you enjoy hanging out with, sometimes it's just something to do while talking to other people on Discord. But it provides you a little bit of flexibility in what you're doing. A lot of what we do is first person combat because that was something that was necessary for their Squadron 42 game. That's one of their most developed systems in the game at this point. So new cargo came on recently. They've got salvage, they've got mining. All those things are just fairly chill activities to do with friends. So if you lean into the social side of things, it allows you to kind of take the hits of those bugs better. If you need somebody to play with, that's where our group comes in. So we're Immortal Mercenaries. I'm Supreme Alderman out on the Spectrum forums on robertspaceindustries.com, which is where Star Citizen can be found at, send me a guide request. Tell me where you guys found me, and I'd be happy to help out.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate that. The last thing I want to touch on before we shift out of our Star Citizen discussion is I think we would be remiss if we didn't at least address some of the controversy around Star Citizen's development. As we've already briefly touched upon, this is probably one of the longest developed games in history. It has also got some of the most kickstarted backing in history of any product. And it is currently, as we've already talked about, it's an alpha. It's not released, and there's no projected release date at this point. So, I mean, let's talk a little bit about those controversies there, Matt. Like, what are your thoughts on that, and why is that okay? Like, tell us about that.
Yeah, so you've got games like Starfield, been in development for a decade and came out with the same game engine that effectively the Fallout games have always been running.
Mm-hmm.
They have done anything. They've not updated their character models. They all look like lifeless corpses still. So
they're all in that first person, so, like, I'm stuck staring at you.
So Chris Roberts has not really ever been good at managing scope on any of his projects. He's a visionary, but he's not exactly somebody who can necessarily execute. It requires a team around him. Now, what they're doing is they're doing a level of transformational technology. They've had a couple hurdles. The technology that they had attempted initially in order to be able to bring all these things to communicate and have kind of the persistence and things like that where all the servers can track all that information, they had to go back to the drawing board more than once. So they've had some struggles in that technology, but what the project being crowdfunded has allowed them to do is to kind of weather some of those blows.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else, whether it be Activision, Blizzard, or anybody else, Bethesda, anybody, they always have to associate with their quarterly earnings, right? They have to be focused on where their investors are looking at, and they need to have something coming out. So that is not a recipe for something that's going to be transformational. The technology cannot be kind of expected when you are expected to have a kind of standard release of information. So there have been hurdles, but with any new technology, it's not going to change overnight. So they are sitting in a situation where they are showing demonstrable progress. Right now, you've got Squadron 42 that is now flagged as feature complete. They're doing polish passes, a couple cleanups of lines, things like that. So we should be seeing that out relatively soon. Star Citizen itself is almost to the point where they have a secondary star system coming online that once they've got the server meshing all into the system. They prove out the technology at CitizenCon this year. They showed that the technology actually works now. Now it's a matter of scalability and making it dynamic. So they're showing incremental steps towards their eventual goal. It's just a matter of patience is not something that gamers have been ever known for. And you're always going to, and when you have people who have spent thousands of dollars on this project, because they believed in it, they believed in that, and then all of a sudden the deadlines that they're being provided are not being hit. It's really hard to do that. And it's always going to be the struggle between what your expectations are for the game versus what the people whose job is for marketing and what they're trying to actually get out the door. So marketing is supposed to get them money, right? And then you got developers that are like, I can't meet these wild expectations in this timeline.
Well, and you kind of bring up on a couple of good points is from an outsider looking in, it's really hard for us to get behind, well, how come there's not a game out yet?
Yep.
But from the other perspective, it's like they've done a lot of impressive stuff. I'm watching the Star Citizen, the Star Engine tech demo that they did, and it's a very impressive demo. And there is some reward for your investment if you put that in there. I mean, $45 to go, you know, screw around in a really impressive universe is not terrible. I mean, I spend more money on that on games that I've thought were terrible. I mean, we've got I didn't spend any extra money on it, but we got Redfall recently, which was very unimpressive and uninspired. And you know, I would rather spend $45 on what I'm seeing from Star Citizen than on the $60, $70 it would be to buy Redfall.
And Redfall was supposed to be a complete game.
Yeah, yeah. That's a big difference. If yeah. Redfall was a alpha or a beta, I'd be like,
it is what it is. Yeah, it's not so bad. Fact that, yeah.
And right now, I mean, it, like I said, the starting on the 17th through the 30th of this month, it's free fly. So set up an account, shoot me a message if you want to fly around and get a feel of where the game's actually at this point. If it's not for you at this point, go play something else. That's yeah. That's why you're saying, okay, you've only spent 1,000 hours. But yeah, I've only spent 1,000 hours. There's other games to play right now while it's it's a matter of checking and see where it's at. But it's getting to the point where it becomes our mainstay. It's the thing that we always come back to. And it's like, talking 1,000-something hours on this, I had maybe 60 hours into Starfield before I was like, okay, I've seen pretty much everything there is to this.
Yeah.
Well, with that, we need to go ahead and start shifting things along. Matt, I really appreciate your input and your insight on Star Citizen. This is the part of the show where we start talking about some of the other games that we've been playing, things that we don't have enough time on for all of us to jump into and really do our deep dives, but things that are worth talking about nonetheless. Matt, I'm going to go ahead and let you start since you're the guest. You shared a couple of games that you've also jumped into. Can you briefly tell us about those?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of them is Satisfactory on Steam. It is basically a space game where you are building out factories to exploit the resources of a planet. So a lot of crazy logistics and conveyor belts, crazy things like that. The most recent update is coming out on 11/14. So I just recently got back into that so I could be prepped for update 8. The other one is a very kind of cutesy thing that looks almost like a mobile game, but it's only, I think, $10, $12. It's called Don't Die in the West. Available in early access on Steam as well, and your general premise is something happened to your uncle or something like that, and you're out in the West and you've taken over his ranch, and so you're trying to build up the ranch and also fight off bandits and do everything else. So it's kind of an overview cutesy style shooter type game, and so it's a little bit different from a lot of the hyper realistic things that I play on a daily basis.
Yeah, it seems like a good change of a pace. I've heard some cool things about Don't Die in the West. I don't know if I'd jump into it or not, but it sounds kind of neat. So I've jumped into this Sea of Stars, which came out recently and is on Game Pass. I believe it's on PlayStation Plus as well. Josh, I don't know if you're aware, if you've able to confirm that or not, but it is fantastic. It's definitely one of my picks for Game of the Year. At least in contention, maybe the indie game of the year. It is a pretty short 30 to 35 hour completion RPG, classic style turn-based RPG with some really cool integrative mechanics, timing mechanics where you have to to time your blocks, time your attacks. There's cool attacks, combo attacks between characters. The story is really it's kind of heartwarming, but there's some dark elements at the same time. You follow these two characters from basically childhood into their young adult maybe era. There's a group of three friends. They're the Solstice Warriors, the two main characters, and their best friend Garl. And you just have to go through and kind of take out this really powerful, overwhelming evil character, and you make friends along the way and explore a really cool universe. It's done in the style of a Super Nintendo classic 16-bit RPG, and it's got fans of like Golden Sun and Chrono Trigger will be right at home in this game. So check that one out if you're interested in any of that. The other game I've been playing a retro game, Earthbound, which is on Nintendo Switch Online. I had never played it before. I wasn't super interested in it, but I needed something to kill some time. Man, I am really surprised with how much the Pokemon games were inspired by this game. the look, the feel, a lot of the mechanics. Obviously, there's not the collecting and capturing of monsters aspect of it, but a lot of the other like core systems are stemmed straight from this game. It's really creative, especially for the time. So I've been playing that one, and maybe check back in with that with everybody in a few weeks after hopefully I've finished it. Jared, what have you been playing?
Been dropping some time in Motorsport Forza.
It's the latest Turn 10 game, right?
Yeah, it's out on Game Pass, but I always, with the Forza games, I always get the, like, deluxe editions.
Oh, really?
Because I play them a lot. But I like the Motorsport version better than Horizon. Horizon's more of, like, an open-world playground with cars and beautiful landscapes, whereas Motorsport's more on the rails. You're going to real tracks. Like Laguna Seca, places like that, places where the F1 cars will race, and Silverstone and whatnot. But it's gorgeous. It's what you'd expect from a driving sim these days. I mean, almost photorealistic in some instances. You can get really, really, really in the weeds with tuning your cars in this one. I'm too much of an idiot and I don't have patience to do it, to read in on it, but they have very complex mechanics in order to like change the tire pressure of your front two tire. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, it's impressive.
So it's a gorgeous game. Just like any Turn 10 game, it can be as accessible or as nut busting as you want it to be. So like they can do braking assists, they can do the race lines on the track, or you can remove all of that and just, you know, have at it. And then what I really like about Motorsport is when you race, even in single player, your competitors are people who are actually racing on their own games, so they're actual real players. And I think that what the engine does is it uses some sort of an AI to simulate their race style, and so it's almost like you're racing these people. So it's I just like the way it's done. It's fun. Cars are always beautiful, and it's something that you can jump in and do a 10-minute race of practice session, run the race, and then you can hop out. So it's something you can play for hours or play for, you know, chunks of time here and there. But I love these games.
I'm super impressed with how good looking these games are.
Oh yeah,
they're very impressive, visually speaking. But
well, with the Motorsport games too, it's the last thing I'll say is before you can actually like tour your cars as well. So it'll put it in a garage. You can open the doors. You can open the trunk. You can open the hood. You can look inside, check the interior. So on top of the racing aspect, I mean, it's car porn. On top of the racing aspect, you can really like appreciate your car, interior, custom paint jobs, all that stuff. So it's a beautiful game. It's a fun game. If racing sims are your kind of jam.
Fantastic. That's on Game Pass for anybody who isn't sure if racing games are their jam. Josh, what have you been playing? I know at least one of these games I'm pretty interested in because it's a recent release.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously we've beaten Starfield. I've moved on, take a break from that. I wanted to get back into Final Fantasy VII to get ready for the remake part two. So I started playing through the original again.
You mean you didn't, you're not playing Ever Crisis? You didn't just feel enough out of that?
Yeah, I got the gist of what that game was from the beta, and I don't know that I really need to go back to it.
I've failed it was, myself. So
yeah, I mean, it the idea, the skeleton is interesting, but the way they've employed it, it's just too watered down, too on rails for it to be fun to me.
So but, with seven, are you just replaying the points that are probably gonna be in the upcoming sequel to the remake?
I'm to the point where you're basically at the end of the game. You know, I'm at the crater. So for that's not a spoiler for anyone. I mean, this game's been out for
dang it, two decades.
So almost 3 decades.
With the remake, though, we should be a little conscious of it just because we'll have a lot of new people getting into it. But that's not a spoiler.
Yeah,
though.
Like what's the crater? But it's at the end of the game. You know, the crater. Yeah. So Not quite the point of no return, but it's still, you know, you can basically get to one point and then you know it's the point of no return. But I was probably just going to grind up and maybe do fight the weapons, the ultimate weapons, the emerald, ultimate weapon, emerald, diamond, whatever weapons there are. I forget. Then, of course, I've started playing as recent as Friday, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, which is, you know, billed as kind of a return to the 2D glory, right, of Super Mario platformers. A lot of people compare it to, from what it does for the genre and the franchise, basically the best 2D entry since Super Mario World, which I think it's pretty good. I'm still not crazy far into the game, like, you know, World 2. So, but, you know, they've added some kind of features to this game that kind of add a little bit more complexity and also maybe accessibility with the online play. You don't necessarily have to be playing with people to kind of see the benefit of online play in that game. But they've added also a badge system to this game where essentially, you know, you can have one equipped and it does a interesting little navigational augmentation to kind of how you can move around. Nothing game breaking by any means, but just, you know, things that might be helpful for certain levels. Although there is one that kind of puts it on a little bit more of an easy mode and creates exclamation point blocks for you to kind of run across and things like that, but I don't really use that one too much so far. I like it. It's a good game.
We'll have to check back in with you in a few weeks after you've had some more time with it, because it definitely looks interesting. I'm watching some videos of it right now and I'm gonna pick that one up, but
holidays. Not to quietly I guess I'm changing the subject, but the other game that I've really been trying to keep myself from buying right now is Star Ocean 2 Remake. That game looks good.
I've heard that.
And it's been rated extremely well, too. So it's that kind of 2D, HD 2D with a 3D rendered kind of world around it. It's kind of an interesting art direction. You know, it's a classic that everyone loved or when it released originally as well as a follow up to the original Star Ocean. So, I'm trying to keep myself from buying it right now. And so far I'm doing well on that.
But we'll check in on that one as well. So, has Josh bought a game he doesn't need to buy but wants? So, we're about out of time. I want to thank Matt for joining us this week and giving us a really good in-depth discussion about Star Citizen and, you know, just PC gaming in general. Well, that's something we've definitely not had a lot of, and hopefully we'll get some more of as we continue to find some guests and to bring some guests in. We'll definitely have you back on, Matt. We really appreciate it. Do you want to share your contact information again for those that are jumping into Star Citizen?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on the guiding program on the robertspaceindustries.com website, which is where you, the kind of the portal to get into Star Citizen. So there's the thing called a guiding program on there. Find me out there, shoot me a message on there, say, hey, I heard you on the podcast, but I'd like to jump into Star Citizen. Happy to help. I've got a handful of guys who are relatively helpful, depending upon the week, to help kind of guide you in through that navigation, because right now the early steps are really a struggle. Sometimes it's even hard just to get out of a space station on your own.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks for offering that up. I'm sure we'll hopefully get some takers on that. If you want to chat with us, you can hit us up on X, I guess. Pod_win. We are also available at play2winpod@gmail.com. Of course, you can find us on your favorite podcast catcher. Please, if you like this podcast, you want to hear more, give us a like, give us a thumbs up, 5 stars, leave a nice comment.
If you have time, check out Alex's OnlyFans.
Yes, I'm really needing some money on the side here, and right for some reason it's not popping like I thought it would. If you really hate this and never want to see it again, and you want to punish people, hey, send it to your enemies. It's a great punishment too. So thanks again, guys, for coming in. Thanks again for Matt for joining us, and we'll see you in a few weeks probably. I think we've got some stuff in the hopper, and hopefully we'll get a new topic coming up soon.
Bye.
See ya.